Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, buddy!
Hey, buddy!
Hey! You know, now I'm nervous. Okay, on the last episode, we talked about being nervous about all of our footage, whatever. Our recordings not being good quality. Now I'm nervous about it, but...
I'm nervous about it, too. I'm also nervous about the fact that we are in a bungalow, and it is pouring rain outside. So if you guys hear this lovely background sound of just raindrops, let it lull you into a state of listening.
That's beautiful. My voice is the float tank of your mind. Yeah. That's a little throwback to season one.
Hey, speaking of season one, welcome to season two. Yeah, we're back again. We're going to dive right into it, guys. We're going to pick up with the pressing question that we left off with last week, which is...
If you were turned into a cat, how would you let your loved ones know?
Oh, God, such a good question.
Right? And, you know, I've been thinking about this question since like 2012. I mean, there's a couple options, right?
Okay.
There's like the...
There's
just so many factors. It's like, where do you come to as a cat? Are you in the home of your family? Are you out in the wilderness somewhere? Do you have to like ring the doorbell magically somehow?
I think it starts with you. So wherever you were at the time.
Okay.
Right? So like, let's say you're like about to enter your house. You like put the keys in the door. You open the door, turn into a cat.
Okay. I like that. Okay. Yeah. So see, I was going to say, well, what I would do is... I would go up to my loved one who would obviously be on the computer and sit on the keys. And then I was like, every cat does that.
I know. I was thinking, okay, the way I'd let them know is I'd have to get their attention. I'd knock something over. Every cat does that.
You're right. You know what? Okay, you know what I would do? I would sit on their lap and I would like stand on my hind legs and put my paws on their shoulders. And then I would put my nose on their nose and I would be like, meow, 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 meow.
Oh my God. But what if when you sit... That's like you cry for help. Meow, 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 meow.
And they'd be like, whoa.
Hello?
Where'd this cat come from? And I'd be like, meow, 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 meow.
Okay. That's good.
What would you do?
I think what I would do. I'm trying to think of something a cat wouldn't do. Because right now I'm freaking out that maybe my cats are humans that have been turned into cats. Because they do all these things. But I think what I would do. Is I would pick up a piece of paper with my mouth, drag it, and then I would go pick up a pen, and then I would show that I'm trying to write, and then they'd be like, are you trying to write? And then I would just stare into their eyes,
dude.
And then nod, and then they'd probably scream, and that's the hardest part, I guess, is after you've been turned into a cat, how do your loved ones not just be like, demon?
You know, that's really smart, dude. That's really smart. I was thinking you could also, if you're in your own home, you can like go to objects that are very much like your objects. Ooh. Or like that make the person you love think about you. So like if I was at home, I would go to my banjo and I would start storming the banjo with my little kitty paw.
Oh,
right? Or
yeah.
I could go up to my like Sailor Moon shelf and be like,
meow, 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 meow. Or I could go to where we keep all our sex toys and just lay on top of them like, why?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think these are really effective strategies. Yeah.
I mean, there is the inevitable. Your first few tries will probably not go through.
I mean, humans are really accustomed to ignoring the needs of cats, you know? And you kind of have to after a while.
What a heartbreaking sentence.
It's true, though. You know, all cats could be humans trapped in cat bodies. And I'd believe it.
Yeah.
And what would you do if you were a cat? I'd probably just lay in the sun, too. I'd probably do exactly what Lady does. Just stretch out in the sun.
You know, you're right. I might not tell anyone for a little bit. Yeah. I'd be like, I'm just going to go be cute and rub up on some people's ankles.
And when they're not home. Oh, no, you wouldn't be able to turn. You could turn on the TV. Oh, I guess if
you could not play a video game.
Oh, you couldn't. You might get boring after a while.
But you would think about how, okay, all of a sudden you can now literally like jump the human equivalent of like a 4-story building.
Right. But you're trapped inside one room.
Okay. But you can like.
If you can get outside, you think the world's going to be your oyster.
I'm just saying like very small things would suddenly bring you unimaginable delight. Like hair tie on the floor. You know, you'd be like, okay, I gotta get out of this situation. What am I gonna do? And then you'd like accidentally flick it away and then you'd be like, oh.
And the world would become like, it is already 3-dimensional, but in the same way that like fish can go all around, mm-hmm. you'd be a cat so you can jump up on things. I mean, I guess humans can jump technically, but not as lithe as cats. You know, it seems to me. Oh my God.
I'm just imagining this like little camera, like cat cam and your voice and you're like, man, me and Ella gotta wash the floor.
Yeah, that's literally what I would think. And I would just be like, God. Lastly, here's what I think. Here's what I think. Mm-hmm. I think there's many advantages and disadvantages to being a cat. And you know what? At the end of the day, nobody's perfect.
God damn it.
Especially not us.
God damn it. I actually was like, oh my God, I could do the transition. I was like thinking, I was like, how would I do it? I was going to be like, but you know what, dude? There's no perfect way to tell your loved ones that you're a cat.
I like that one way more. You're right, Hannah.
But you're, that's good, dude. I'm just saying I'm getting a little better at podcasting, maybe.
There is no perfect way. There is no perfect way to tell.
Oh, my God.
To tell your loved ones you've been turned into a cat.
Oh, my God.
Speaking of perfection.
Can't even with you.
I guess, but we must. Guys, today on the first episode of our new season of Hannalyze This, we are going to be talking about perfectionism. Now, in the new structure, we're going to be focusing on one topic over the length of multiple episodes. So this is officially kind of just the introduction to perfectionism and how it affects our lives.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be really not at all excruciating to talk about this.
You know, I've just not been thinking about it.
Actually, I told my roommate, I was like, yeah, we're going to do perfectionism this weekend. And she was like, is that a good idea?
Whoa.
You sure you want to do that?
I mean, normally, you know, it's kind of like we're staging our own intervention over something in our lives. Mm-hmm. And normally other people do it for you, or you just walk in your room and you're like, whoopsie, I would assume. You know, I think that's what it's like. But we're doing it for ourselves. So, guys, without further ado, we have no advertisers. So let's just throw a little music here and then just begin.
All right.
Anna, what is perfectionism?
Well, according to Anne Lamott, it is the enemy of the people. It'll keep you cramped and insane your whole life. Mm. That's exactly what she says. God, she's so good.
And according to a lot of religions, it's the goal that you should do and strive for.
Really?
Maybe just the cult I was raised in. I don't know. Is perfection possible? Probably not. Mm. The definition that we have before us says perfectionism is the relentless striving for extremely high standards for yourself and others that are personally demanding. Judging your self-worth based on your ability to strive for and achieve such unrelenting standards, experiencing negative consequences of setting such demanding standards, yet continuing to go for them despite the huge cost for you.
I think it's a really good point to say that it's extremely high standards for yourself and or others. Mm-hmm. I honestly, it would be hard for me to believe anyone could be a perfectionist and not also be
really judgmental.
Really judgmental.
I know.
You know?
Well, that's what I always say when people are like, oh man, that person's so judgy, or like, God, they're always so negative. They're always so critical. I'm like, well, imagine what the voice inside their head is like for them. You know what I mean? I don't think anyone actually is judgmental without also reflecting that lens inward. Mm-hmm. But maybe I'm wrong. But
I mean, honestly, I think we're all just talking to ourselves all the time.
Pretty much.
Like right now, I'm just talking to myself. But you're here also.
Perfectionism. Is it? Oh, yeah. I love you too. It's not necessarily about the idea of being perfect. It's, I would say that perfectionism, by my definition, is a less than realistic goal. It's a goal without consideration for yourself or any other factors going on. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And also, I would say it's always down. It comes down to this like horrible, horrible, like gut deep belief that you're just not enough.
Yeah.
You know, I think it comes out of fear and like just like horrible, sweaty fear.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, I want to get an A on that test. I mean, that is like what it may manifest as, but I think there's sweaty moments is what I'm talking about. This podcast is sweaty now.
Yeah, this podcast is sweaty now. It's all Hannah's, all sweaty. It's interesting because I wouldn't have necessarily thought I was a perfectionist until we started kind of like diving into this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Mainly in my mind, having quote unquote unreasonable goals is the only way to motivate myself to do anything.
Mm-hmm,
you know, mm-hmm. Is that without the extreme nature of the goal, I'm not really compelled to do it at all.
So it's like a very black or white kind of all or nothing.
Yeah, all or nothing. And word. Then when I, because if it's all or nothing, I'm going to land somewhere after the all. Like, okay, 100%, 120% or nothing. And I'll be like, 70 is pretty good.
Mm.
Or I'll be like, zero. I don't know, man. I'm pretty nervous because we have some voice recordings from our loved ones to talk about how they see examples of us being perfectionists.
Right. And let me tell you, loved ones, you came through. First of all, when I told our lovely assistant Fabs all your email accounts.
Fabs is actually our producer now.
Fabs is our producer.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So I was like, cool. If that was okay, like if I had received that email from me, I'd be like, yeah, get to that in like 3 weeks because
what email?
I'm going to be a perfectionist about answering it. Fab sent emails to our loved ones saying like, can you talk about this person, one of these Hannahs, and about how perfectionism affects their lives? And they were like, hell yeah. How much fucking time do you have? But dude, I was going to say, it's really tough too because all that black and white thinking and stuff, and that's really also just a part of like depression and like ADHD and like it's just really hard to, it's all like all wrapped up in each other and it's hard, you know.
Yeah Perfectionism manifests itself in many ways and sometimes you need different tools to confront it every time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm curious though to find out, well frankly I just really want to hear what people had to say.
Me too. I'm scared.
I'm scared too. Oh, God. Okay, guys, let's all be brave together. So the purpose of the beginning of this, just to cover, is to define what perfectionism is. We're defining it as such in these terms, ipso facto, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, God. Okay, now I'm just stalling. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
All right, buddy, you ready for this?
Not particularly.
Dude, I just want to say, neither am I.
Oh, good.
I'm super scared.
Me too.
I'm really scared, dude. This is like the hardest part of myself to look at, you know? God. And I consider myself very vainly, probably, and egotistically, weirdly, to be a person who's like, ah, I do it all the time. I'm not afraid to go in. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Just like everybody else. It's fucking terrifying. Here we go.
Preach. You know what the hardest part of myself to look at is for me? Back of my head. I just can't do it, man. Not without help, you know? Not without help. Meeting mirrors?
Yeah.
Okay. Right before we dive into the voicemail, we have a handy dandy list. Hannah, will you explain what we're looking at?
We have a little chart with six statements. And you can say true, somewhat false, false for each of the statements. And it'll help you evaluate like how much of a perfectionist you are. How much is perfectionist destroying your life?
How much
this chart will help you figure it out. Shall we walk through it?
I think so.
Okay, number one. Here's the statement that can be either true, somewhat false, or false. Nothing good comes from making mistakes. Now, here's the thing. I know I'm talking so loud, my banjo is twanging in the background.
I can hear your banjo being like, ooh.
I know absolutely, intellectually, 100% that that is false.
Yeah.
Nothing, like, of course, everything good comes from making mistakes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to mark it false.
Right.
However, I know that I'm still terrified of making mistakes.
True. But it doesn't say, is making mistakes scary?
You're right. Okay.
It says, nothing good comes from making mistakes. True, somewhat true, somewhat false, false. Reflect in your hearts, everyone. I'm also marking it false. Oh, sorry.
I was going to say, there's like this lovely sound of rain pattering in the background.
Get ready for this lovely sound of rain for the next 3 weeks. Okay, very good.
I see that Hannah jumped ahead. That's not at all.
Unlike her.
Something that would happen.
Don't look at my test.
Okay. Yeah. Do you want to do the next one, buddy?
Yes, please. I must do things right the first time. Well, did that sound like I was a robot that was learning how to speak? Let me try a different set of inflection. I must do things right the first time. This is a weird sentence.
That's kind of more like after school special voice.
I got to do things right the first time.
Like, Mom.
Here, you read this. Mom, I must do things right.
Hey, Sakura, let's go get those cloud cards. Remember when... What the fuck is up with dubbing of Japanese anime into American English? Like,
I don't know.
Why would a 12-year-old boy talk like that?
Why are you doing this? Whoa! 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 Because sometimes they just have to extend it in the dub, you know? Please try to emphatically read that sentence. Like, read it, like, in a compelling way.
I have to do things right the first time.
You rephrased it.
I know.
I made it better.
Awkward statement. It is.
I must do things right the first time. Mm-hmm. That does it sound. Anyway, true, somewhat true, somewhat false, false.
Okay, once again, I absolutely 100% know that that is false. However, I want to do everything right the first time.
Me too. I wrote true because that's the truth for me. Is that I'm like, how do you do it? Well, okay, somewhat true. Okay, I'm going to say somewhat true. Somewhat true. Because...
Wait. Sorry, am I doing this wrong? Because I put false because I know it's false, but that's not how it like actually plays out in my life.
No, I think you do what you know about yourself.
Okay. Also...
See the word I? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I must do things right the first time is a somewhat true statement about myself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it.
And for instance, you've been practicing banjo for 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. I dropped banjo like a hot potato. And I was like, my fingers hurt. Fuck this. This is hard. My hand's cramping.
I mean,
so I would say it's false for you, dude. You know you're not going to do it right the first time.
Okay. Okay. I guess I still judge myself very harshly.
Well, you want to do it right the first time?
I guess, yeah.
Everybody does. I mean, it's a want. Like, right. I want to do it. But, I mean,
I feel like more balanced.
I want a slam dunk.
Or like, it doesn't like, it's not as powerful as a desire for them. They're like, yeah, this is normal. And then, you know, the rest of us are like, oh, okay. I'm just going to go home and sit in the shower with my clothes on and think about what a failure I am.
You said that so loud, your headband came off. So, hey guys, we'll be right back. Here's a word from us. Gelby, our Patreon is officially launched.
Oh my God. And we have like over 100 people. It's so exciting.
We actually have over 200 people.
Holy
shit.
You guys are showing up in a big way.
They're showing up, man. They're showing up.
Appreciate it.
Their hearts are big and their heart crystals are even bigger. Guys, if you want to know what we're talking about, you can go to patreon.com/hanalyzethis and sign up to become a patron today. And trust me, you want to do it today because tomorrow, Hannah Gelb and I both are going to be jumping into our after party Discord chat that every patron is a part of.
So we're going to talk. We're going to be there. It's going to be a party.
Wednesday.
30 minutes.
For 30 minutes.
And we're going to talk about whatever. I'm going to use every emoji I know.
Wow. I'm going to hold you to that. Mm. We also want to hear your thoughts on perfectionism so far and how we're doing on season 2. If it already sucks,
let us know.
I'm sorry. You're paying for it.
We're open to communication. That's what this is about.
I love helpful feedback. So we'll see you guys there Wednesday, 3:13 at 12 p.m. Pacific time for our internationalish, for our that is California time.
The best time.
Oh, California is the best time. Almost as good a time as we're having on this episode. Let's get back to it. Okay, you want to read the next statement, buddy?
Sure. I must do everything well, not just the things I know I'm good at.
Ooh. For me, this is true. There's so many things I am good at that...
It's true, buddy. You're good at a lot of stuff.
It's hard when I do things that I'm not... If I'm not naturally gifted at it, I won't do it.
Dude. You know, man.
Like running. Or follow being through with anything.
Well, dude, you know, I think that's kind of the same for me. Like probably when, you know, you're naturally very apt. So you didn't have to work really hard to like do well. And then when you suddenly encounter something where you do have to work, you're like, what the fuck?
Why would I do this? This brings me no joy.
For me, this is chemistry, sophomore year of high school. I was like, I don't understand. Not going to try. And like, I got a C, which was fair.
So would you say it's true, somewhat true, somewhat false, or false?
I would say this is, I'm going to say between true and somewhat true.
Dude, that's literally what I'm marking also. Whoa! Oh my God. Yeah. It's hard. If I can't do something perfectly, there's no point in even trying. That attitude doesn't sound like what I think I sound like in my head, but the feeling of if I'm not doing it well, I must not be able to do it at all. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, moving right along. I rarely give myself credit when I do well because there's always something more I could do.
Oh God, that's like 1,000,000,000% true.
That's my lesser. Oh yeah, she's got so many X's right there. She's marking so them all. So many X's in that little box.
I'm like, I don't even. It's like when I do well, people are like, "You did well," and I'm like, "No, I didn't."
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
I would say it's somewhat true for me because I do like the feeling is like a high, like yeah, I did it, but then it's gone. You know, like it gives you that peak and then it valleys out.
Like if you finish like a video and you like post it and stuff, what are the like? I could have done some more thoughts that like come up. Or you're like, I could have done better. I could have like written more. Or I don't know how you make videos. I was like, writing? That doesn't happen.
Like, that doesn't sound like Hannah. I never watch them after I post them. I can't watch them again. I'm like, well, it's done. It exists. That's good. And I feel good that I posted it. But if I watch it again, I start to be like, no, 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 no. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. You know, so it's like it's really hard for me to watch my own videos. I'm just so not wanting to ever. So I'm going to go ahead and say, actually, it's true. And last but not least.
Sometimes I am so concerned about getting one task done perfectly that I don't have time to complete the rest of my work. For me, this is so true. I'm putting it all the way in the left margin.
Oh, wow. It's like, it's not even, it's like almost off the page.
Yeah. God damn it. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, man. No, you're totally right. I'm going to go ahead and mark this out too. It's a good thing and a bad thing, right? Because, for example, dishes are in the sink. I'm like, can't wash the dishes because there's not enough time to vacuum. So.
Right.
That's life.
Dude. My room right now, I hope it burns down before somebody ever sees it. I'm like, well, I can't put my clothes away because if I put my clothes away, I might as well change the sheets. If I do that, I got to do the laundry. If I do that, I got to clean off the desk. If I do that, I have to systematically go through every single thing I own and figure out if I really need it or not.
Dude, yes.
And if I start that process, I don't want to stop. I don't know why I can't stop it. I know, which makes it impossible to do things. Like, for example,
I know it sounds so absurd when you say it out loud.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds absurd to say, I can't fold the laundry. I don't have enough time to organize the cupboard.
Right. But like, even now I'm like, no, that makes sense.
I'm like, what is the point of folding the laundry if I don't know if I have duplicate spices or not, man? Dude, like, why would I even do that?
It's like, you have, it's like, this is what we got to do. We got to think.
Now I'm putting it all
We have to think ahead to future selves that'll be like, you know, I'm really glad I got that little bit of laundry done.
I've been trying really hard to moderate laundry doing. Mm-hmm. Fuck. Yeah. So that's the truest statement that's ever true in our whole true life.
Yes. And like, for example, one way it really affects me is if I'm like working on a drawing or something, I'm like, I'm not going to stop till it's done. But like, a work of art could take months, weeks, months, a year even. So leaving something unfinished and coming back to it is just so hard. And then it's so hard.
I think though, that's why artists do so many iterations of the same concept, because I think that they do complete it the first time and then they do another. You know what I mean? Like, there's always like V1, V2, blah, blah, blah. Or like I forget what the term is, but not an exercise, but a blank of fruit, you know, and you see like one artist will have like 20 different sketches of the same fruit. You know what I mean? So yeah, maybe that's how they like get that completion feeling, but then also leave room to do more drafts. Question mark, maybe. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Do you think anybody knows that we're like this?
Well, we're going to find out.
Yes, we are. So right now we're going to listen to some voicemails that some of our loved ones in our lives sent us to see if perfectionism is apparent, to see if they can see it in us. Huh?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
I'm scared.
Let's go.
It's going to be great.
Okay.
Okay. This is Hannah's friend, Sam, responding to the question of how perfectionism influences Hannah Gale's life. I can just give a really quick example. So Hannah and I became friends in about 2001, as we both had a love for dudes in Speedos and Frodo Baggins. So that pretty much connected us. That was a strong relationship from the beginning. And I've watched Hannah, you know, continually deny herself things because I think of this, like, idea that she's not good enough or she's not perfect. And one clear example that I can give is we were at the mall one time and we saw, Hannah and I saw this amazing T-shirt that had a really close-up picture of Elijah Wood as Frodo Baggins from Lord of the Rings. And it was beautiful. Like, we both agreed it was such a beautiful shirt. And we loved it so much. And Hannah bought it, and we were so excited. And then I found out, like, a few days later that Hannah went back to the mall and returned that shirt. And I still kind of haven't forgiven Hannah for doing that because her whole viewpoint was that she, like, didn't deserve it. And I feel like she... You know, that kind of sums it up. You know, Hannah has held herself back from a lot of things, from art, from doing the type of activities and work and engaging with life in the way that she wants to because she doesn't feel like she's good enough to even try it. She's not perfect, so why even try? You know, watch Hannah not do art projects when she's an amazing artist, and I've seen this since, you know, 2001. Has been frustrating, and I feel like, you know, probably one of the few points of frustration in our friendship has been, you know, getting frustrated with each other, and also myself in this, when we become our own enemies. So, yeah, that's how I'll respond.
Wow, we got to get Sam on the podcast. Sam!
Don't deflect, Hannah.
Sorry, you're so funny, and I could hear how mad you are about that shirt. I, too, wish I still had that
shirt. What happened with the shirt?
So, let's see. We must have been, like, 17. First of all, it was, like, $20, and I felt like I wasn't cool enough to wear it.
You weren't, I'm sorry, cool enough? Sorry, give me one sec. Sorry, I just gotta say this sentence.
Okay.
You felt like you weren't cool enough to wear a shirt of Elijah Wood as Frodo Baggins on it.
You know what? I think, yes. And I didn't, I was like, it's too vulnerable. I can't expose myself that way to everyone.
Because then everyone will know. What?
If I wear this shirt, I'm going to have to be this person who wears this shirt who, like, I don't know, man. I just.
Wow. It was, buddy.
I was already. Or thinking about how everyone else is going to think about me wearing the shirt. I could, even though I just wanted to wear it because it was awesome. I'm so sad talking about this. Oh my God.
Could you wear it at home? I mean, $20 is a lot when you're a teenager. I'm not going to lie. I mean, like, I think you got to forgive yourself for it. But it's also like, if you had the $20, right? Like, man. Yeah. Oh, man.
I mean, I'm 17. I was living at my parents. Like, I could buy a $20 t-shirt.
And you could wear it at home if you liked it. Did it make you feel bad?
I think I just was so, at that age particularly, I just didn't want to be noticed, really. Mm. You know, I wanted to, like, hide, kind of. Mm. I think I was so self-conscious about my body. This might have been pre my
breast reduction
surgery. Mm. And I feel like, it was very, like, form-fitting. It was a couple things. It was, like, too tight. I didn't want anyone looking at my boobs. It was too much money. Not really. It was feeling like it was making a statement, and then I wasn't going to be able to back it up. People are going to be like, Lord of the Rings, huh? And I'd be like,
dude,
this is the saddest thing.
It's not. I think that's okay. It didn't make you feel good. It made you feel vulnerable. That's good. That's good. That's okay. Yeah, you returned the shirt.
But I feel like if I had, like, keeping it would have been like an empowering move. Oh. You know, like, I would have been like, I like this shirt and I'm going to wear it because it makes me happy. Mm. I'm not going to think about how it's going to affect all these other people, which I cannot control. You know, but I did not have the wisdom back then. Mm.
You had me at too tight, though, man. Yeah. My best friend in high school also got a breast reduction surgery, and she felt there were lots of t-shirts that particularly she wanted to wear, but she could not wear them because they felt uncomfortable, either too tight or too baggy. And then it's just like, oh, wow. You know, and after her breast reduction, because she was like double D-ing it out or whatever, she felt...
So it's what we call it.
That's what you call it, double D-ing it out. She felt a lot better. Because it has a really huge impact on your life.
Yeah. Well, it's too bad that, like, I mean, aside from the physical effects, it's too bad that breasts are just so incredibly sexualized. And if you wear a t-shirt that exposes your breasts, even though they just exist on your body and you can't do anything about it, people are like, oh.
You did that for me?
What'd you do that for? Yeah. You know, you can't even separate the two. I mean, it was awful.
Oh, my God.
So anyways.
Do we have to keep doing this?
That was terrifying. Okay, okay, this is... You know what? This is okay, dude. We're just getting it out there. We don't have to dive in right now.
Okay, got it. We're just getting out there. You're right. You know what? Let's just take it all in. Let's just take them all in. Let's just take them all in and limit ourselves to one sentence of response.
Oh, dude, good structure making.
Let's do that. One sentence response. Boom. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's keep going.
Wait, one sentence each?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Hi, I've worked with Hannah Hart for a few years now. Obviously, Hannah is... incredibly talented, wonderful to work with, just a delightful all-around human. The ways that I've kind of seen perfectionism impact her in my limited role, I would say there are four primary ways. The first way I kind of see it play out is that I think her perfectionism causes her to lose motivation a lot of times. I think, you know, all of us, if we can't do a job well, it's really hard to get motivated. And I think because Hannah's standard for well for herself is perfect, it's unattainable, and because of that, if she can't do a job perfectly, which none of us can, obviously, it can cause her to lose motivation.
Yep, that's me. That's two sentences, or a comma,
or semicolon. Oh, buddy, I just feel for you so much because I like know that feeling of like. You get that really exciting flash of inspiration and idea, and then comes the time to like execute it, and you just get that feeling of like, I'm not going to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm. And it's like failure before you even start, mm-hmm. You know? I think that a lot of times also the only way I know how to confront that feeling is to barrel through so quickly, like almost like I'm trying to outrun the failure. The feeling of failure, like barrel through it so quickly. And people are like, wait, no, you're going to miss this detail. Or like, oh, you got to slow down. Or if you put some time and thought into it, it would turn out better. And I'm like, no, it wouldn't. If I put time and thought into it, it wouldn't exist.
Can I tell you something? Even though we're keeping this a little shorter, I made a note to myself that I think would be helpful for you as well. And it hasn't worked yet, but I think it will someday. I realized, okay, when you're working on your thing, whatever it is, and all that shit comes up, it's like, you suck. You can't do this. You suck. It's not going to be as good as you want. And you're miserable. If you can like continue to work while being miserable and hearing all those terrible, terrible thoughts, that's you like loving yourself.
Whoa.
Like, that's love. If you keep going, that's love right there.
Whoa.
That's you putting, like, love in the universe and loving yourself.
Dude.
You know?
Wow. Do you want to hear another voicemail?
Yeah. Oh, God.
Hi, this is Steve Gelb. I'm Hannah's dad. And I think that perfectionism affects Hannah's life in two ways that I've noticed. The first one is that it stops her from doing things, because if a person thinks that you have to do everything in some perfect way, then you feel like you'll never be able to accomplish whatever the new thing is, and so you avoid trying things. For example, when Hannah was much younger, when she was still in school, she was really interested in art, but she wouldn't take art classes then because she was afraid she wouldn't be good enough. And she's overcome that since then. And so the second thing I wanted to say is that it stops Hannah Gelb, from being aware of how many amazing things she's accomplished and feeling good about them, because she's done a lot of amazing things and she's overcome a lot of things in her life. And yet she doesn't see that. So those are my two takes. And that's all I have to say. Bye.
Oh my God, I love your dad. That like made me get choked. The sound of your dad's voice and just how much love he has for you is beautiful to hear. That's so lovely, man.
I'm just so sad for my little tiny self.
I know, the little Hannah that couldn't take the art class. Because you take art classes now. You've taken them.
Mm-hmm.
You've done it.
Yeah.
How old were you think, in that memory? Or that
probably
thing?
Like 11, 12. I mean, it's just so sad. It's like, why was I a perfectionist when I was 12? Where does that come from? I remember like trying to draw like an animal or something for some, like when I was literally like 6th, 7th grade, and like crying because it wasn't good to me. I mean, I don't know how I like learned this behavior so young.
Yeah, I know. I think that's what we're going to hopefully learn as we do this perfectionism series.
Yeah.
Similarly, I have to say, I remember when I was like 6 or 7 years old, drawing a cat and then being like, that doesn't look like a cat. It looks like a kid drew it. I'm like, this doesn't look like a cat. This looks like some circles and triangles. This is bullshit, you know? I was like, I am not a person that draws.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. I wasn't sad about it. I just was like, that doesn't look like a cat.
Huh. There must have been some source outside of you that was like, or I don't know, like where.
I don't know. You know me. I like shapes and colors and hyper-realistic art. Mm. Like super, 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 super real looking. Like looks like a photograph.
Right, right. We call that photorealistic.
Photorealistic. It has a term.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just want to say thanks, Dad. And also for saying nice things, like I have accomplished things. That's really nice.
He's not just saying that.
I know, I know.
I love your dad. Wow.
I love my dad too.
Let's hear more. Jesus, God. Why did we do this to ourselves?
I don't know. No, really. When I was like driving over here, I was like, la, 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 recording the podcast, la, la, la.
I was like, oh, we're going to have a fun time. Okay, cool. Let's go.
The second way I see it affecting her is it kind of sends her into this spiral of shame, I would say, a lot of times, where it's like there's just no way to win. When I look at Hannah and her life, it just feels like this is really hard to succeed at, because doing it perfectly is impossible. And then if she does lose motivation, she also feels shame about that. And so there's just sort of this shame trap that any choice she makes is going to result in shame. If she tries and it's not perfect, there's shame. If she doesn't try, there's shame. If she tries and she does it okay, there's shame. It's just kind of a trap, it looks like.
So true. Oh my God. Talk about thirst trap, not thirst trap. This is the worst trap. That's shame.
That's the worst.
Shame's the name of the game with me. That's it. It's all about that. Yeah, no, that's so, it's exactly right. It's like sliding down a pyramid. No matter what direction you go, you're still sliding down. It doesn't matter if you're sliding down from the side, north, south, east, west, you're still sliding.
It's so cruel because there's an idea like, if I can do this the right way, I will be happy. but you cannot get your own approval no matter what.
I know.
No matter what. That's like how it's designed.
I know.
By Hellraiser. No, I don't know. I've never seen that movie, actually.
I have a question. Well, I just have like a one. I'm curious, and I'm going to break the fourth wall here. Do I make people that work for me feel ashamed, Febs? Like, you know what I mean? Because I don't want to like raise my kids and make, I don't want to give them the shame I feel. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well. Oh, God. Jesus. Okay, let's keep going. Who's Hannah's third one? I'm so excited.
Hi, this is Sarah. I have lived with Hannah Gell before the past 2 years, and we lived together, or we lived next to each other, but shared a backyard in college. I can say that Hannah Gelb is definitely a perfectionist, in that I've noticed that perfectionism often means that you don't even start a project because you're already sure you can't do it to your high standards. And I've definitely seen that kind of behavior regarding Hannah Gelb's work. Let me just say here that she is usually very good at what she puts her mind to, but I've seen her struggle with that feeling of no matter what she starts, she's not going to be able to finish it, especially when it comes to doing art. She's had a lot of really fun art projects that people have commissioned, and she definitely puts a lot of pressure on herself. And I totally get it, and it's easy as a friend to see from the outside that someone's doing a great job, but I've seen her struggle with that internally, feeling like no matter what, she's not good enough at it. So what I would like to say, Hannah Gelb, is you're doing a great job, even if it doesn't feel like it.
Man, I've got good friends. Hey, yeah. You know what's great? Hearing people say the same thing over and over again.
But it was three different people with three different examples.
But it's really great, dude. It's like,
you're like, oh my God.
It's because, like, hearing it over and over, you're like, holy shit.
And these are people from different moments in your life, right?
Yeah.
Like your dad.
Yeah.
Sam.
Yeah.
Sarah, your roommate currently.
Yeah. Like, why am I so hung up on art? Why can't I just do art?
I don't know. I don't know. But you know what I think is interesting is that I'm hung up on writing. Mm-hmm. But what's crazy ironic is that when it comes to analyze this stuff, like, I asked you to write all the captions because I'm like, I can't do it because it won't be good enough.
Yeah. And I can do it because I have no self-worth attached to writing. That's right. Why I can do it.
Right.
The secret to life is to not care.
Yes.
Like, what the fuck? But perfectionism is caring too much.
It's attaching your worth to your work.
Yeah.
Okay. So like for you, it's like you don't have any self-worth attached to writing. So you're like, write little captions for the Patreon page. That'll be so fun. And for me, I was like, write captions. Captions? What is a caption even? You know?
Right.
And then I just go away to fire. Yeah.
There's so much writing on it in your mind, you know?
I know. We got to not attach our worth to our work.
Right.
Okay, let's listen to the last one of this painful circus parade. Sorry, earbuds. I hope that this is good. Something good will come out of this, okay? Look, we're doing a whole series. It's not always going to be like, okay.
Yeah, no, it's not work because, you know, after doing it this one time, we're never going to do it ever again.
The third way is sort of tricky. I think in some of her relationships, based on her reactions and responses, I could think sometimes she can feel as if the standards, the unattainable standard of perfection is externally being put on her as well as internally. And so, you know, for me in my relationship with her, that means sometimes I'm overthinking kind of how do I ask her for this thing I need from her? Because what I don't want her to hear is that I need her to be perfect or I needed it to be done yesterday or that she's already failed. But I think sometimes Hannah can feel when someone asks her for something as if that is what they're communicating, as if maybe she already failed, as if she already missed something, as if she's not perfect. And that can also trigger that shame spiral and frustration, you know.
Yeah, that's about right. That's that lens of shame, man. Putting the lens of shame on everything.
I get so angry sometimes. Somebody reminds me of something that I'm doing. I instantly react like, I'm doing it, you know? And then sometimes if somebody reminds me of something I did forget about, I'm like, oh, shit, yeah, I forgot. Thanks. You know, but like no one else can tell what that
so
is.
So it's like a
fucking Russian roulette.
Right, like, unpredictable.
It's right. So it's like, hey, Anna, did you do this? Yeah, I did it. Okay. I did it. Surprise, surprise. You know, that's how like.
And I think that's tough because then you're like unfairly putting it on other people. And I've done that. I've definitely. People are like, oh, so did you put your name in the thing? I'm like, don't talk to me like I'm an idiot. How dare you?
Yeah, it's like, did I put my name in the thing?
No.
No.
Because I don't even have a brain in my head.
I know. Well, I will say that sometimes it's funny. Like, I think if it's something that I struggled to get started on, there is one small distinction. If it's something that I struggled to do, like, I have a really hard time, like, if I'm doing an ad, writing the captions, writing the stuff for the ad. I'm always like, ugh. So finally, if I force myself to do something that brings me no joy, I'm like doing it. And then someone's like, hey, did you finish that? I'm like, yeah. But it's not how I feel about them. It's how I feel about the thing. Whereas sometimes my manager will text me. The other day I had a meeting. I had a meeting at 11. And I'm like in the elevator going up to the meeting. It's like 10:59, like 11:01. Like it's right around there. I'm like going up to the meeting. And my manager texts me being like, are you going to the meeting today? ? And I'm like, no, what meeting? That's what I wrote back. Because I was like, what are you talking about, dude? Yeah. So sometimes it's fun, right?
Was she like, what?
No. She was like, yeah, of course Hannah's at the
meeting. Oh, got it. Yeah. Yeah. Man, it's so hard to be alive. I mean, you're talking about like, it just takes so much constant checking in and communication.
Word. I know. Okay, let's hear your next one, brah.
All right. It doesn't really count, but I want to read it anyways because it's very sweet.
Okay, let's read it anyways.
Okay, my good friend Rebecca, she says, I actually don't see Hannah's perfectionism having a negative impact on our friendship. It has never ruined a night, an interaction, or a conversation. Adversely, I see Hannah working through her perfectionist tendencies as brave and vulnerable, and they make me feel safe leaning into our friendship. That's beautiful.
That's nice. You know,
the thing about perfectionism is won't let you give yourself credit for trying to work on your perfectionism.
To trying to work through that. Yeah. No, that's very true.
It's like, oh, well, you don't want to be a perfectionist? Well, let us perfectly go about not being a perfectionist anymore.
Uh-oh.
I know, right? Doesn't it make you want to walk into the ocean and never come back?
Okay.
Wow.
Should we do the last one? Okay.
And one of my favorite things about working with Hannah is she's pretty aware of all of this, and she does a lot of work to take responsibility for those feelings and to try to navigate them and work through them. But for sure, that perfectionism is impacting her in her work. And the fourth way that I see it affecting her is really has to do with just, I think, enjoyment of work. And because of the unattainable standards, because of the spiral of shame, because there's just such a slim margin of success when the standards are as high as the standards she sets for herself, then there's really a limited time window for enjoying a project. It's kind of like on the very front end, it can be really enjoyable because there hasn't yet been failure. But in the execution phase, even in the completion phase, it is hard for, I think, Hannah to take a step back and feel and enjoy and celebrate what she's doing and what she's done. Not because she's not like proud of her work and like thankful for her life, but much more just because it didn't meet the standard she has, that she can see all the million ways it could be better. And you know, that just makes it, I think, a little bit hard to celebrate.
Well,
oh, fucking goddamn, I'm screwed. There's no hope.
I feel, dude, this is heartbreaking because it is.
What?
And it's really helpful to hear all these things in a row because it makes it so clear how much, for me, I'm not even aware of how much I'm clinging to the perfectionism because I think it makes me better somehow.
Mm.
But like, imagine what life could be like on the other side where you're like, I give myself credit for things. I
like a feeling of inherent worth.
A feeling of worth.
Sorry, I can't even say it. It's disgusting. Gagging.
Not feeling overcome with crippling anxiety about something, getting things done, just being more relaxed and enjoying life more. Like that's possible.
You know, that is possible. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what we're here to do on this season of Analyze This.
Part 2, Mission Impossible / darker.
Yeah. Ooh, this is the darker season of Hannah Lives too.
Oh my God, it totally is. It's like the Chamber of Secrets.
Oh shit. Brandy Nero, will we be able to do
this? This is our gritty Henry Cavill Superman.
Oh my God.
Not at all Brandon Routh Superman.
Okay, I want to pose one question right before we go.
Do we want to change?
Yes.
No.
Oh.
Do we want to change? Yes. Do I want to put in all the horrible, tedious work of doing it? Yes and no. Does Dean Winchester love Sam Winchester more than anything?
Okay.
Okay. Gotta take it one day at a time. I'm sorry, dude. What was your question?
This is a question. Or rather, it's a question and a statement. I want to have a goal. Because obviously we can't erase perfectionism from our whole life, But mainly, I'm going to pick one area of my life where my perfectionism exists and make that my goal for this journey we're going to go on together. For instance, my perfectionism about folding the laundry and sorting the cupboard ain't so bad. Every time Ella comes home, she's like, did Elva clean? And I'm like, no, I did, actually, for the last 4.5 hours. So I don't mind being a perfectionist about cleaning. I think it's pretty okay. But I have a goal, which is this. I want to enjoy my work again. That's my goal.
That's beautiful, man.
I think so. Can't breathe. Tell me what's your goal.
Sorry. I 100% support you. Well, this is tough because I feel like perfectionism affects every part of my life. But listening to all those voicemails that all mention art, I think I kind of want to make it about like sort of like what you're saying, like work, but more like tasks. Because like poor Sarah, for example, my roommate probably noticed, like even I won't do the dishes if I don't feel like I can't do all the dishes. So I want to like allow myself to do things little chunks at a time. Mm. Whether it's like an art project, writing, like meditating, journaling, like doing anything and being like, it's okay to not do it whatever way you think you should do it in your head.
So your goal is to be comfortable with the incomplete task.
Yes.
Wow. Good luck to us.
Oh, God.
Oh, guys. Hey, guys. Thank you so much for listening.
What have I just done?
I know. What have we just done? I am genuinely scared. Guys, if you want to support our fear, if you guys would like to become a part of our wonderful earbud family, you guys can go ahead to patreon.com/analyzethis and join and support this podcast as we go on this journey. And hopefully, by default, other people can get benefits from this journey, too. If you guys want to see the grids and the tools that we're using, those are also all available over on the Patreon, and as well as the behind-the-scene looks at our little doodles, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Beth?
Yeah. You know what you're going to get to see if you're a patron? You get to see all the lists of Sailor Moon tier names that I came up with.
Oh, my God. Yes, please.
Because clearly I made a few.
Yes, you
did.
There's
just so much material to work with.
I know. You got a treasure trove. And you guys can check out my doodle from today's episode that I did while listening uncomfortably to the things that we just put ourselves through. So every tier evolves. Every tier that you do includes all levels of the tier behind it. So level one is level one. Level one and two include, level two includes level one as well. Level three includes level one, two, and three, et cetera, et cetera. It all builds on itself. Thank you guys so much for listening. Subscribe to this podcast, rate, review, and let's just go take a break. Yay! See you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Time
to curl into a ball.
Yep. My favorite shape.